From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump late last week signed the new version of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, at the G20 summit in Buenos Aires, Argentina, along with the leaders of Mexico and Canada. He announced on Saturday that he would be terminating the original agreement in 6 months, setting a deadline for the U.S. Congress to ratify the new agreement. Trump threatened that if Congress didn't ratify the deal, the three nations would return to pre-1994 trade rules. Trump has referred to the new NAFTA as the USMCA, or the United States-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement. However, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has refused to use that new name in the new version of the trade agreement. Are some labor provisions, access for American farmers to the Canadian dairy market, and a new requirement for auto manufacturers, among other things. We turn to Patrick Woodall, Research Director with Food and Water Watch and Food and Water Action. He's been our go-to guest on the subject. Welcome back, Patrick.
It's great to be here, Sonali. Thank you.
So this deal was signed by these three leaders. And I should add, of course, that doesn't mean that it gets implemented because the Congress and the parliaments of all three nations will have to ratify it for it to take place effect by 2020. But it seems as though Trump was rushing to get it done before Mexico's new president took power, right? Andrés Manuel López Obrador was just inaugurated, but it was his predecessor, Enrique Peña Nieto, who in the last couple of days of his presidency signed this deal.
Right. So that creates a little political cover for the incoming president of Mexico, who can attribute any flaws in the agreement to his predecessor and doesn't have to take all the political heat for the problems in the deal. So that was the rush. That's why they accelerated the timetable over the past several months. They inked the deal, I guess, in the last week of August and then had to sign it on last week, as you said. So that was the impetus for moving so quickly. The next steps are really up to the Congress. And the reality is that there are a lot of opportunities and real need to remedy a lot of problems, even in NAFTA 2.0. There are many things that need to be fixed. So there's still a long way to go, irrespective of Trump's bluster on the pulling out of NAFTA.
Hmm. By the way, what are we to call this new deal? Is it the USMCA? Is it NAFTA? New NAFTA?
I mean, I think it's really new NAFTA. It's only NAFTA with a few bells and whistles that are improvements mostly, and there are a lot of problems that were added to it. You mentioned some of them are the longer pharmaceutical patent monopolies, the absolute failure to get swift and certain enforcement provisions in the labor and environmental sections. There is a host, as I've talked to you about before, of the kind of deregulation that Trump is pushing here at the EPA and at other agencies. A lot of that is just baked into the new agreement. So there are a lot of problems in this, even though there are some improvements in terms of things like the auto parts manufacturing content rules and things like that. But there really are problems with it. I think we're calling it NAFTA 2. That's really what it is. It's not a new, brand new agreement. Most of it is largely the same. And which is why some in the business community are supporting it, some and we're continuing to oppose it because it doesn't address the fundamental flaws in the original NAFTA, which is creating a trade deal that works for communities, working families, and the environment. And this doesn't live up to that. That was sort of what Trump promised, that he would create a deal that would bring jobs back. And the kind of while this was being finalized, General Motors laid off another 15,000 people in Canada and the United States. So it obviously is not the kind of deal that's going to restore manufacturing jobs to the U.S. And with all of the anti-environmental provisions, things that we think are going to have an impact on food safety and sustainability, this is really a step backwards in a lot of ways.
And I want to get into a little bit more detail on some of these issues that you brought up. But let's actually hear how Trump described this new NAFTA. He likes to call it the USMCA. So in Buenos Aires, Argentina, the G20 summit, he used a lot of superlatives, as he is wont to do, on describing this new version of this trade deal.
With our signatures today, we will formally declare the intention of our three countries to replace NAFTA with the USMCA. The USMCA is the largest, most significant, modern, and balanced trade agreement in history. All of our countries will benefit greatly. It is probably the largest trade deal ever made also. In the United States, the new trade pact will support high-paying manufacturing jobs and promote greater access for American exports across the range of sectors, including our farming, manufacturing, and service industries. As part of our agreement, the United States will be able to lock in our market access to Canada and Mexico and greatly expand our agricultural exports. Our nations have also agreed to innovate new measures to ensure fair competition and promote high wages and higher wages for U.S. and North American auto workers. The auto workers are a tremendous beneficiary. Under the USMCA, at least 75% of our automobiles' content must be manufactured in North America, and 40 to 45% of automobile content must be manufactured by North American high-wage labor in order to gain preferential access to our markets. This will help stop auto jobs from going overseas, and it will bring back auto jobs that have already left. This landmark agreement includes intellectual property protection that will be the envy of nations all around the world. The USMCA also contains robust new provisions on digital trade and financial services and the most ambitious environmental and labor protections ever placed into a major trade agreement. In short, this is a model agreement that changes the trade landscape forever. And this is an agreement that, first and foremost, benefits working people, something of great importance to all three of us.
And that's President Trump saying that the new version of NAFTA, first and foremost, benefits working people. Patrick, if you listen to his description of NAFTA, it's going to revolutionize the wages, the environment, labor rights in this country. Let's talk a little bit about what he spent much time on, which is auto manufacturing. You mentioned that GM at the same time that this was being finalized announced a layoff of 14,000 workers across North America. But according to Trump, new NAFTA will promote higher wages for auto workers, and that auto workers are a tremendous beneficiary of this. What exactly is the deal between the three countries on auto manufacturing?
So right now, there are a couple of things that are changed in the proposed NAFTA 2. One is that it would increase the content of auto parts that are manufactured within the three countries to qualify for the NAFTA lower tariffs. So currently, I think it's at 60%, and it would raise that amount to in the 82%. And that would mean that more of the car or the parts would have to be made within the three countries in order to qualify for the lowest zero tariffs between the three countries, as opposed to importing parts from other countries where the labor standards are even lower. The second change in the new NAFTA is one that would require 40% of the parts and manufacturing to be produced by people who earn at least $16 an hour. And this is sort of an idea to raise Mexican auto worker wages. And these are important steps, and it's nice that they are made. The reality is that first, that this is not going to stop the flood of jobs out of the United States, and the kind of GM layoff announcement really shows that that's the case. Second, what's really missing in NAFTA is enforceable labor standards that make it possible for Mexican workers to earn a decent wage, a decent living, to join independent unions, to stand up for their worker rights in terms of safety and conditions and unfair firing practices. And those are the things that are absolutely necessary to raise working conditions in Mexico sufficiently that it won't be a draw for outsourcing U.S. jobs to Mexico under the new NAFTA or the old NAFTA. So these are, it's an important to recognize that issues related to content, issues related to wages are really important. But the most important thing is to strengthen labor protections inside of Mexico. And that requires having enforceable labor provisions that are swift and certain under the new NAFTA to make sure that there isn't effectively an incentive to offshore more jobs.
Right. Mexico, of the three nations, has the lowest average wages, lowest costs of living, when the original NAFTA was signed in 1994, we saw a lot of tremendous struggles within Mexico, right? Losses of industries in Mexico as well. Many even suggest that it was the 1994 NAFTA that further pressured immigration from Mexico to the United States.
And it's certainly true that that NAFTA was originally, the proponents argued that it would be an economic windfall for Mexico that would raise the standard of living, raise wages, raise incomes for people in Mexico. And the reality is none of that has come to pass, income inequality in Mexico has been rising, that the wages in Mexico have been falling, and that the poverty rates have been rising. So what we've seen is that when you have this kind of corporate-driven globalization like NAFTA and the World Trade Organization and all of those that followed, they are designed to benefit the biggest companies, the transnational businesses that can chase the cheapest labor, that can chase the lowest working conditions, environmental protections, and that encourages offshoring of jobs from the United States and the exploitation of workers in the developing world. And that's what's happening in Mexico, where the companies, it's easier to fire people who stand up to demand their worker rights. It's easier to crack down on people that are trying to form independent unions. And that is what's going on. And so the wages are low and remain low, even though NAFTA was originally proposed as a way to kind of bring up the Mexican standard of living and make it more in line with the U.S. and Canada. And that just didn't happen. And it didn't happen because it was designed to benefit the companies and not the workers in any of the countries. And so that's what we need for a real NAFTA reboot, is something where a trade agreement that actually is designed to benefit workers and communities and the environment and not just big business.
Right. So any sort of promises that sound really rosy this time round ought to be taken with a big grain of salt. Let's talk about the Canadian dairy market. Now, Trump essentially strong-armed Canada and Mexico to the negotiating table, put them on the defensive. And the issue of U.S. access to Canada's dairy markets was a sensitive one for Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who's been lobbied heavily by the dairy industry, but it looks like in this new version of NAFTA, Canada essentially conceded to the United States, did it?
Well, it increased the market access to Canada a slight amount, but it really isn't what Trump demanded or what Obama demanded in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So they were able to maintain their domestic dairy protections, which are designed to protect small dairy farmers, mainly in Ontario and Quebec, and that's still in place. They opened the amount of U.S. dairy product that could be exported into Canada a tiny amount, but really it's really less than the demand for dairy products in a state like Wisconsin, the amount of opening of the market that they gave. And then anything over that amount would still face really high tariffs, what they call over quota tariffs. And so the market opening was very, very slight, but like even the smallest thing that the Trump administration does is heralded as the greatest thing ever. So this tiny market opening, which is really not that huge of a thing, and nor did they get what they demanded. They demanded that Canada eliminate their protection for domestic dairy farmers. The reality is U.S. dairy farmers are getting pounded right now with very, very low prices, and they would benefit with a system of kind of milk supply management like exists in Canada. If the U.S. dairy farmers had that, they'd be in way, way better shape. Canada smartly did not did not actually bend to Trump's will, and that's going to do a lot to protect Canadian dairy farmers over the coming decades.
So the Trump administration, in renegotiating these details in the original NAFTA agreement, came to agreement with Canadian and Mexican representatives. It doesn't mean that it's come to agreement with the Congress of this country, and the same would hold true for the Mexican government and the Canadian government. Now, Trump has threatened to cancel the original 1994 NAFTA in 6 months, which he is basically hoping will put a timeline on Congress's ratification of this new version of NAFTA. Can he actually just cancel a trade agreement unilaterally?
So I think this is sort of an open constitutional question. The Constitution gives the Congress the authority to regulate commerce with foreign countries and to set tariffs and things. And those things are all part of the NAFTA and international trade agreement universe. The president can notify that he's going to pull out of a trade agreement, but it's not clear whether he can do that without congressional consent. The chair of the Senate, or the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee, has already said that the president doesn't have the unilateral authority to pull out of an agreement that was approved by the Congress. So I think that's sort of an open question. The real, the kind of more political question is Trump just doing this out of bluster? And if and I sort of think this is a kind of classic Trump bullying bluster, and will his corporate minders allow him to sort of try this out and see whether he can take it to the Supreme Court to find out whether or not he has the ability to yank an agreement that was approved by the Congress? I tend to think that's unlikely to occur. The real question here is, what is Trump going to have to do to fix this flawed new agreement to make it better than the old agreement? And so far, there's a lot of work to be done. And this is why a lot of groups, environmental groups, labor groups, consumer groups, have been really highly critical of the new agreement, because we need a brand new NAFTA. We don't need an old NAFTA with like a little bit of window dressing. We need something that is actually going to benefit communities and workers and the environment. This deal does not do that.
Right.
So I think the path forward in the Congress is much less clear given the elections. And I think that the voices that have come out that have been longtime trade corporate driven trade agreement critics in the Democratic Party have been very clear that this agreement does not meet the standard for what is needed in a NAFTA rewrite. At the same time, there are pro-free trade Republicans that are critical of the deal on the other side. So the president is going to have to do work to actually improve what is in there in order to move it in the Congress. I think obviously he's doing a lot of saber rattling so that he won't have to do that or will minimize that. But at the end of the day, it's not clear that he can pull out a NAFTA on his own, and he's going to have to deal with the new Congress.
Can there be changes made at this point? I mean, if the three leaders have signed on to this new version, and then Congress here in the United States demands changes, would that mean that negotiators would go back to the table and start again?
So Congress is would take up something called an implementing act, which is two parts. One is the text of the agreement, but the other is a bunch of legislative and changes and regulatory changes to deal with the agreement. And in past, when this has occurred, it's possible to make changes such that the U.S. could do things to ensure that enforcement would be better, to do things to take into account issues related to pharmaceutical patent length or other things, that we believe that there's space for this to occur. The question is whether, and this is sort of some of the things that happened during the George W. Bush's trade negotiations with the Democratic Party that was in charge in the House in the middle of his administration. So I think there's room to do this. It's not a done deal, and there's still a lot of time for improvement. It's more complicated now that the text has been signed. So there, it's not going to be possible to change the text itself, but there is a lot of room to make major and absolutely needed improvements in the implementing act. And I think that's what people are working on now, which is it possible at this late date to fix a trade text that is fundamentally not near good enough? And so these real substantial changes need to be made on swift and certain enforcement for labor and environmental standards, for rollbacks on this deregulation demands, issues related to pharmaceutical patents, a bunch of things that need to occur. The question is what the Trump administration is going to do about that with a very engaged group of people that have been longtime critics of NAFTA as well, who recognize its many, many flaws and have been really working hard to get a new NAFTA. But this approach that the Trump administration is offering is not near good enough.
Finally, Patrick, with the incoming president, he's actually now officially the president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, was just inaugurated. Is it possible that some of those issues around the enforcement of union rights and labor rights and union representation could see better days under this left-leaning or left-of-center president?
I think there's a great deal of hope that that's the case. But these are issues that have long been kind of stalled in the Mexican parliament, and dealing with them are things, it's going to take more than hope. They really have to deliver on strong labor reforms that guarantee protections to workers. And first and foremost is the right to form independent unions. Right now, the unions are really affiliated with the companies. So it's like student government for workers and not an independent voice for workers to negotiate for fair wages, contracts, benefits, working conditions. So there's a lot to be done. I think people are hopeful that some of that can be done, but the proof will be in the pudding.
Patrick, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find out more about the work you do with Food and Water Watch?
We're online at foodandwaterwatch.org.
Thanks so much. We'll link to that from our website. Thank you for all your work and for joining us today.
It's always great to be here. Thank you, Sonali.
Patrick Woodall is a research director with Food and Water Watch and Food and Water Action. We've been discussing details of the new NAFTA. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.